I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media Interview. On today's show, I'll talk to Jim Serpico and Tom Saletti, co-creators and writers of a new IFC sitcom, Benders. Diligent TV credit readers will recognize their names as the creative forces behind the long-running FX series Rescue Me and the new Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, and an IFC series called Marin about an obscure American podcaster working out of his garage. Stick around. I just messed with the wrong guy, and it's not Dennis Leary. If you like the amateur hockey, locker room, and post-game bar moments found on the Dennis Leary FX dramedy, Rescue Me, you're going to love the new IFC comedy, Benders. You might say it's the former show without the drama. Oh wait, I just did. Whereas Rescue Me pinballed from broad comedy to exceedingly intimate human drama, Benders keeps the sarcasm, crudeness, and lesson-free tone without any of the heaviness. It has elements of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Married, You're the Worst, The League, and even Archer. If you like those shows, and in my household we do, give Benders a try. And while the cast is barely familiar from other shows, the creative team calling the shots and diagramming the plays is among TV's best. Jim Serpico and Tom Saletti co-created and write Benders. Their fingerprints are similarly all over Rescue Me, Marin, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, Sirens, and Canterbury's Law. They also co-executive produce all of those shows with comedian Dennis Leary, the star of Rescue Me and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Oh, and Serpico, in the orange there on the left, also worked on Leary's short-lived sitcom The Job, which later informed Rescue Me and Benders. These guys are really, really good at capturing really, really bad people in situations. They are to coarse adult comedy what Shonda Rhimes is to sophisticated drama on Thursday nights. And what the Duplass brothers, Mark and Jay, are to everything else that is currently sharply written and of interest on TV and in film. Jim Serpico and Tom Saletti, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Delighted to finally meet you guys. Been enjoying your work a long time. And it is quite the TV factory you guys are running these days.
We're trying. You never know in this business. You got to take a lot of swings.
Right.
How many shows are actively in production? I'm thinking three, but I might be wrong.
It's three. There's three, you know, on the air and either scheduled to go into production or in production.
Okay, so Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, Marin, Benders, are the active three?
Yeah, those are the actors three, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And do you have stuff coming up yet on top of those?
We are working on several other pilots and series. Yeah.
All right. Dennis Leary would seem to be the public face of all the shows I've mentioned, but what other common threads are there, starting with the two of you?
Well, geez, Tom and I have been with Dennis since 1994, and Dennis and I worked together a few years before that, and Tom Saletti was actually the first intern at the company that we started.
Really? Yeah. I was like a barnacle that just kind of hung on till they gave me something.
You mentioned The Job. Tom Saletti was involved in that show as well.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I have only IMDb to go on, and you know,
they left me. I get left off of everything in this world. If you send an email out right now, I will be left off. Don't worry.
Sorry about that. Well, and it kind of made me. They're looking at the credits on Benders, which of course begins airing tonight, October 1st, 10 p.m. In case I didn't mention it before, the credits are incredibly incomplete on that. It looks like the couple, the Rosenberg couple, they aren't even credited with being the stars of the show. So
really,
a little incomplete. Yeah. So I apologize, Tom. I did not realize that.
No worries.
It seems that it takes a while for IMDb to catch up on credits. It's a constant fight.
The good thing I do have going for me with IMDb is there's another guy named Tom Saletti who's a producer who actually worked on Rescue Me with us, so I get some of his credits for free.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's very weird. Same name, same spelling, same birthdays. Very confusing.
That's pretty weird. So how did you guys find that you were a good fit writing together and creating together? Because that's, I mean, that's a bit of magic that has to happen. That's like a marriage, obviously.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I mean, listen, we've worked together for so long, and we enjoy working with each other. We're very good friends. I would say we probably wrote the first thing together that nobody knew about 10 years ago that I think we both would admit right now was a hunk of garbage. And we might have wrote a couple other things after that, and then we kind of put it down for a while and got very busy doing some other things and developing with other writers as non-writing producers. And I think we both found out we were writing scripts on our own. Right, Tom?
Yes, yeah, about 3 or 4 years ago. And then we decided to – we had an idea that just we took a swing at to get back into it together. It worked well. I think the other thing too – for us is, you know, along the way of developing with other people, you know, we've had a lot of experience in seeing some of the mistakes that are made, some of the great things that are done. And for us, we learned a lot along the way in our development, and at the same time worked with studios, with networks. So we knew a lot of the things that would come along in that bumpy road to getting something made. And, you know, so we were able to incorporate that into the way we wrote. And we truly, between the two of us, have no ego. We usually write separately, you know, and we'll send things back and forth to each other. And I could send something to Jim and it could come back looking completely different, but it's fine, you know, cause I'm like, all right, well, that didn't work. And if there is something that I feel strongly about, I'll bring it up and we can talk it out and try and figure it out. But for the most part, we're comfortable to rewrite each other. There's no ego. And a lot of times we make each other better.
Right. We also understand production from being on sets for so many years. I think we write from that mindset as well. You know, there was a challenge with the budget we were working with on this show, and we knew that going in. So we were able to write to that to make sure that we could shoot 11 and a half hour days and shoot 10 pages a day. You know, when you break down what we just did on this show, we shot a movie's worth of pages every 12 days, 120 pages every 10 days, actually. So, We bring that to the writing as well.
And Tom, tell me something about Jim. What are the best types of things that he will write about? And then Jim, I'm going to ask you the same thing. What's he the go-to guy on?
I think Jim will, you know, he pushes the envelope more than I do, I think, but in a good way, you know. So he'll really take a shot at something, or he'll really look at stuff in an out-of-the-box sort of way, for lack of a better term. And I think those same skills go to his producing and other aspects of his life as well. But I think for me, that's really the good thing, because I know that he can take something and he can really, you know, push it in a direction you might not expect it to go. And I think that's important in television, because you don't want to be predictable. You want to take your swing. And I think he brings that to it in a strong way.
Jim, what about Tom?
Well, I think as people, we're similar, yet we're very different. I think we find some of the same things very funny. But in life, I think Tom's an optimist. So he brings that to the page, whereas I'm pretty dark and cynical as a human being. And I kind of thrive in depression. Tom writes great relationships and grounded characters.
So, in Benders, the only relationship I've seen so far, I've seen episodes 1, 3, and 5, I think. The main relationship is between the Rosenbergs at the top,
right.
So Paul and Karen, and so you know they. We see them at moments where they're very close, and we see them at moments where she just rips him to pieces. So based on the description, I'm guessing that Tom writes those moments of closeness, and Jim, that you you are the foul mouth coming out of Karen.
I would say it's probably a little of both.
Yeah, because we both, you know, a lot of things, sadly, from the show come from real life, and we both are married, and we both have kids, and our wives are different but similar at the same time, and they're also good friends. And so, you know, we don't live in sitcom marriages, and we tried to bring that to the show. Sometimes, you know, you get called out on things, and sometimes you don't.
So whose grandfather calls in the middle of trying to have sex with his wife? That's what I want to know.
Well, it wouldn't be mine because they're both dead, and I've never met them.
Yeah. It's not my grandfather, but the phone does seem to ring at inopportune moments. Or there's a kid at the door, or there's something going on.
Yeah, exactly. Having my kids off second year of college now, and I watched that and I went, oh my God, the number of times that my mother-in-law would call. Mm-hmm. It's just the worst freaking time. And of course, you always take it because, oh my God, what's something wrong? What if she's fallen and hit her head or something? And it's always like, why did I take that stupid call?
Yeah.
Do you guys accept the Shonda Rhimes comparison as stretched as it was?
I'll let Tom take that.
I don't know. I guess I'll take anything someone wants to give me if it's a good thing. you know, I don't know.
That was well-intended.
I think it was. I think we listen, we write from the heart, you know, and if it's compared to other people, especially if it's in a good way, I think it's a compliment. So,
well, how late in the Rescue Me run did you guys start plotting the shows you have subsequently produced, Sirens and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll and now Benders?
Well, I think they're all different. Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll was something that Dennis had on his mind definitely during the course of Rescue Me, and he even put pen to page. I mean, it's very different now where it was, but, you know, he was thinking about that early on. I think that this show, Tom and I wrote another spec pilot after Rescue Me ended that we didn't even think about till after the show ended. That pilot was called Choke, and it was about a guy whose grandfather asked him to choke him to death, and he did, and then he enlisted his friend's help to help bury the body. So obviously, it's a little similar to the pilot of this, but that wasn't thought of until after.
Right. That was written about after the fact, and that I think that gained attention for us because most people knew us as non-writing showrunners, and they knew that we were creative in the development and production of the series that we did, and in other projects as well. But that was really the first time I think a lot of places looked at us as writers and potential showrunners. And during Sirens, USA had, you know, kind of championed us to write a script for that, which we did. And then FX brought us on to a pilot that ironically was about hockey. It was about minor league hockey. And, you know, those steps kind of led us to Benders because, you know, IFC came to us with the hockey idea for Benders.
Oh, really? Because, I was just going to ask you if I got it right in the idea that Benders is kind of the expansion of those Rescue Me hockey moments, it seemed to me.
No.
Very similar, right? I would have almost gone out so far as to say it almost looks like it's shot in a similar place, but probably not.
Yeah. No, it's all different. That was, you know, like for us, we wanted to do a character show. Even with the FX show, it followed a hockey team and how that team did, you know, and it was very strictly a sports show for the most part. And, you know, for us, we don't want to pigeonhole a show into one thing like that. And we really, truly gravitate towards more character driven pieces in that sense. So IFC came to us and said, you know, we want to do a show about a bunch of guys who play on a men's hockey league team. You know, I still play now. I've played since I was a kid. So we were like, yeah, you know, we could do something like this, but we don't want it to be just about the team. We want it to be about the guys and the camaraderie and the stories that come from their personal lives.
Right. And I think that is a consistent theme in all of our shows up until now. And I think that's another reason IFC came to us, because they thought we might be able to deliver that. You know, in terms of the look being similar or similar to our other shows, you know, they're relatively low-budget cable shows. And when I talk about budget, I'm talking compared to network shows. So you have, you know, less time to shoot these things. So the quickest way to shoot is handheld. And that gives it a certain look. So a lot of our shows are shot with two cameras simultaneously handheld. So I think there's a consistency there. Not to say that we wouldn't do a show a different way. With this show and with Marin, there's just no other way to do it.
Right.
It's just too fast.
Yeah, they're 3 episodes, 3 days per episode.
Wow.
It's a fast schedule.
It seems like with Benders, you guys got a young, it was relatively inexperienced and presumably inexpensive, speaking of budget, cast with really nothing but potential upside. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, Lindsay Broad has the most acting experience on television. Then comes Mark Gessner, who's done mostly commercial work. He plays Dickie. But after that, everybody was pretty new.
Right.
It's their first scripted show.
Lindsay is the Karen Rosenberg.
Yeah. She plays Karen.
She reminds me of a lot. I can't remember the character's name. Dennis's TV wife on Rescue Me.
Yeah, Callie Thorne played Sheila.
Sheila.
The girlfriend.
No, no, not Sheila. No, his...
Andrew Roth.
Yes.
Andrew Roth, who played... what was her name on the show?
Tommy's wife.
Tommy's wife. That was her name. Tommy's
Janet.
Wife. Janet. She reminded me a lot of Janet. There's a lot of Janet in her, and it's very easy to see where, you know, there's a lot of room to grow there. Particularly, I love the women's book club scene.
Yeah.
Go up and stay awake for me, will you? Just,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I think we wanted to make sure, and you know, there's some episodes where she's not as prevalent, but we wanted her to be a character who is, like, all these people essentially are, you know, narcissists in their own way. And we wanted her to be able to be one of the guys when she's with the guys, you know? And we didn't want her to be, you know, the voice of nagging or anything like that. Sure, she'll call him out on things, but we didn't want it to be just a one-dimensional role.
Right. And tell me about your star, Andrew Schultz. It seems like he, like Dennis in Rescue Me and Sex and Drugs, gets to do an awful lot of awfully funny things, whether it's sleeping, grinding against his TV wife, while following instructions to her own instructions to strangle her, or strangling his own 78-year-old peepaw. How do you know someone is right for a crazy role like that? I mean, that's, you know, you could have cast him, and then on day one he goes, "Whoa, no, I can't do that shit."
Well,
that's not
it. He would never say he can't do it. He would just lie to us and try to do it, like he did about skating.
So he can't skate.
No.
Actually, he ended up not being too bad, but no, he couldn't skate.
He's natural, and he was able to pick it up. Yeah. He never really skated before, and the same goes for Chris DeStefano, who plays Anthony. But they worked really hard. And as soon as they got the parts, they started training and learning as quick as they could, and they got to be pretty good. And it's something they really got to enjoy, and they want to start playing now for real. But, you know, with Andrew, we worked with him once before on a pilot at FX that we shot. It didn't go to series. But, you know, you're taking a big chance. You're taking a big chance, and we just believed in him in our gut. And at the end of the day, I think we're both very happy with the choice.
Not that as parents you would ever choose favorites, but who else are you excited about in the cast for people to discover?
Chris DeStefano, for sure. He really became more than what the character was written. You know, he really pops off the screen, and he's super funny, and he's very likable, even though he is the guy who really plays, you know, an asshole, but he is...
He's a likable asshole.
A likable asshole.
And I think of all the characters, he's probably the closest in real life to his character than anyone else in the ensemble. He's a likable asshole.
And you're welcome, Chris.
Andrew's very different than Paul Rosenberg in real life.
How so?
Yeah.
He's a little more street, you know, and he's hip, and he dresses a certain way. And I think Paul Rosenberg is more or less tailored after a suburban accountant,
right?
Who's a little buttoned up looking to get loose.
Andrew is, you know, he dresses. He has the skinny jeans, and he only wears Nikes, and he's got a certain sense of style. And it's funny because originally he, you know, was imagining his character to be dressing like that. You know, and then we told him, no, this is what you're wearing, you know, get ready for the polo shirts. And And well, he embraced it, though, because he said...
Well, he eventually embraced it, because first he tried to pull one over on us by telling wardrobe, this is what my character's going to act like and wear. And then we had to have a talking to.
Right, yeah. And then it became like his Superman cape. Once he put it on, he became Paul Rosenberg at that point.
Right.
The character of Paul reminds me a bit of... and I apologize, I can't think of the kid's name. He's the youngest guy on Saturday Night Live the last season.
Pete Davidson?
Pete Davidson, yes. He reminds
me. Very funny you bring that up.
The character, yeah. Oh?
Well, he's just a friend. He's a friend of ours, and we had actually worked with him previously on developing a project for him right before he got Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
We had written a spec script that he was the lead for.
He's a funny kid. He hasn't quite grown into his face or his body yet.
Right.
You know, yeah. And I know he's taken a lot of crap just, you know, for things that he can't control. But Paul Rosenberg reminded me a lot of Pete Davidson watching the episode. So
very interesting.
If you love or hate Pete Davidson, you may love or hate Paul Rosenberg. So the three episodes that I've seen, I wrote down some lines that I really liked. And what I'd like to do is read them and see if either of you will take credit for writing them and maybe tell us a little bit more about anything behind these lines. All right.
Oh boy.
There's just three. The first one is you referenced this before. Paul's in the pilot. Paul's grandfather wants Paul to kill him by Sunday, so he doesn't have to suffer through. And I know a lot of us feel that this way through any more New York Jets games. And then he adds, "It'll go a long way to proving you're not a homo."
All right. That's a combo right there.
Yeah.
Well, because I wrote the Jets line and Jim wrote the homo line.
and we both thought, and we were just talking about this morning, because that line is getting a lot of traction. People are quoting it and talking about that, and we were very close to cutting it out of the show. Right?
Yeah, we just said it literally an hour ago.
You know?
Somebody tweeted something about the Jets line.
And I think well, I'm as a Tampa Bay Bucks fan, I feel that way down here, the same thing. It's like, please, don't tell me when the game is on. You know what the worst was? And you guys will relate to this if you at all follow the Jets, for real. The first season of the year, two or three weeks ago, I've got the TV on in the other room so I can follow it, and I've got it set on Fox. I've got my timer set for 4:30. I'm looking forward to the Bucks against the Titans, big game, the number one, number two draft picks going up against each other. I didn't realize that it wasn't on Fox. It was a CBS game, I guess. And so my wife calls me at 4:35. She's at work, and she says, "Did you see the beginning of the game?" I said, "No, it hasn't started yet."
Oh, no.
She said, "Oh, no, it's been on for 5 minutes, and Winston threw a pick for a touchdown, and then Mariota came in and threw another touchdown, and the Bucks are down 14-0. I said, "It's only been on for 5 minutes. I haven't even – the season hasn't even started for me yet."
So
That's you know, it's kind of like, yes, if I had a grandson who could come and offer to kill me at that moment, take me. All right, so the second one. When Paul is trying to figure out how to kill his grandfather – One of his teammates on the Chubbies says, "Jesus, for someone who's about to kill his people, you got a lot of rules."
Yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, who that was?
Yeah, I don't know if.
You know, I don't know. That was that. I don't know which one of us that was. I don't know.
It sounded a little bit like Rosanna Dana saying, "You know, Richard, whatever your name is, for a guy from New Jersey, you sure got a lot of a lot of questions."
That's pretty funny.
That's what made me think of. All right, the last one. In episode 5, I'm giving this away. I apologize, but you kind of telegraphed the end game of the episode. Simple rule: don't bang your teammate.
Well, that was Tom.
Yeah.
That was very clearly that was Tom, without question.
Have you ever had a female teammate on your hockey team?
I do. I actually have one now on my team. Yeah, I've played with a lot of them, and a lot of the female players are really good too. So, and there's some that are very similar to Molly, and some that aren't.
Molly has some interesting tendencies in the locker room. I won't give that away, but that's some really good stuff.
But wait, Tom, where did that come from? I don't even. I mean, because there's guys. I know you get emails all the time with like a list of rules,
right? And there was something that we had discussed. I think it was like from a team that wanted to make the playoffs and.
Right. They asked the people not to have sex or something with their wives or girlfriends.
Don't, like, because it was a hot girl on the team. Don't fuck with anybody on the team because the captain is so – usually the guy who runs the team, it's like a second job / life for him where everything, you know, when people are not paying or when people are not showing up when they're supposed to and, you know, for him, it's just the world is falling apart. Whereas some guys are just playing and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to go tonight or whatever. So there's some guys that are very strict about it. And he did not want the playoffs to be in jeopardy about, you know, losing a player because, you know, someone hooked up and everything was going to be awkward in the locker room now. So, yeah, there's some people who take it way more serious than our guys do.
You have a guy, and I don't know the actor's name, African American, who
Godfrey,
that's it. Yes, who he? There's a great line. He pops up for the games, and someone said to him something about, "You're not really trying, are you?" Pause. No.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not really.
No, not at all. Who came up with the team name, the Chubbies? Because they're not fat,
right?
Yeah, I mean I get it, but I'm just curious who.
It's actually a true story. I played on a hockey team about 10 or 11 years ago. We were called the Sweethearts, and we liked having dumb names. And we decided to go out and pick a new team name. One of the guys who was getting the jersey had picked out a bullet logo. It was a the logo that he liked and wanted the team to be the Bullets. And we went to this bar and it was a dessert called Uncle Chubby's Brownie. So everybody said, wait a second, that's a great name. Literally, as as it's in one of the episodes, you see the guys originally find out that their team is called Uncle Chubby's with a bullet logo that looks like, you know, a giant penis on it. And that's exactly how we felt. And we skated out on the ice looking around thinking, oh, Jesus. Fortunately, we were a good team. But, it became a very funny thing on the ice, and we became well known.
Do the Chubbies on Benders, do they have a logo for their team? Or will we see that eventually?
Oh, yeah.
They have
it's featured. It's the exact same jersey almost.
Oh, yeah. It is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That detail may have
just in the episode that you originally saw where they're the Bullets is in the second episode is where they changed their team name and we see them go through that process. So in the first one,
exactly,
those maroon jerseys.
Right.
But then they do switch over and you see them pick the team name. You see them discover the jerseys and. You see the fans' reaction to those jerseys.
All right. Well, so I have an excuse. I only saw the odd-numbered episodes.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So we'll give you a pass on that one.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I try to get my details right, and so this time it was not for lack of trying. Speaking of hockey, now it's not exactly America's favorite sport. It's actually doing better these days than it used to, but it dominates the athletic side of a lot of the things you guys have worked on. And I wonder why is that? Is it that it's cheaper to shoot, like at an amateur ice rink? Or?
You know, I think it's really by circumstance. I mean, Dennis is a huge hockey fan. He plays a lot. So, we all write what we know. So that's what he's writing. In this case, it's a combination of the network literally coming to us and saying, we want a hockey show. Will you guys write it? Thus, we're writing a hockey show. Tom does have a lot of experience playing hockey. I don't personally play, but I'm there a lot with my kids who play. But we could have written this show about another sport easily, and we have talked about that.
Have you guys watched episodes on Showtime?
I have not.
Matt LeBlanc show?
Yeah.
He plays the coach.
Right, of a sitcom team, sitcom show called Pucks, and it's
okay.
It's totally – they use pucks as the example of the worst possible sitcom writing and plotting that ever could exist.
Right.
So I just
we don't get compared to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that show's funny in its own way, and Bender's is funny. I mean, it's just a funny show. It's funny in the, you know, very much going back to, you know, Rescue Me type of style. But I just wonder why we keep seeing so much hockey. I just figured maybe because it's an indoor sport, maybe it's cheaper to shoot. I don't know.
It's actually not cheaper to shoot.
It's very tough to film those scenes. Yeah. And we actually really – we had written all of our scripts in advance, and we were able to schedule out the entire series in advance and find a chunk of a couple of days to shoot all the hockey for all of the episodes. And it was the most grueling days of the production. It's very hard. But, you know, I think part of it, too, is that the hockey fan base and the hockey community, you know, has really wanted something to latch onto for so long. I mean, there's when those movies come out, you know, like Slapshot in the past or Goon most recently, like they really gravitate towards it. And it's really, you know, a passionate fan base that is dying for something that, you know, in a way they can relate to.
The Mighty Ducks 1 through 6.
Yeah.
Who knew I knew this much about hockey on TV and film? I don't know.
I wonder, I mean, what do you think about this, Tom? Is it associated more with it being a blue-collar, working-class sport, and some of our programs are associated with that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, for the amateur beer league side, for sure. I mean, you know, this college hockey is huge, and I don't know. I think even in the college hockey side of things, though, I think you do find a common denominator through most hockey teams. You can pretty much end up, you know, finding very, you know, similar characters on different teams, whether they play for an Ivy League school or whether they play for a beer league team. You're going to see some common threads between the types of guys and the way they act and talk and
right.
the things they do.
I mean, at some point we talked about doing this for softball. You even talked about a co-ed dodgeball league. And we were talking about the episode "Don't Bang Your Teammates."
Right.
There's a lot of the storylines that we could have done for other sports.
I always thought that Artie Lang's beer league would have made a great series.
Yeah,
in the same
without question. Actually, the guy who wrote and directed that writes on Bender's, Frank Sebastiano.
Really?
Yeah. He's a good friend of ours, and he's a fantastic writer.
Interesting. Yeah, that had a lot of great moments to it. What so moving away from Bender's, I want to ask you about a few other things, and we'll let you get out of here with your lives intact. I'm sure you're disappointed that Sirens did not get picked up, I guess, for going to a third season. It had two,
yes.
Right?
It had two seasons, yeah.
What do you take away from that? What did you learn that maybe you can apply to, you know, Bender's or other shows going forward? Anything? Any real lessons?
You know, shooting wise and shooting on location in Chicago was an amazing experience. We'd love to go back there and work there. They have great crews.
I think it was kind of a victim of its own circumstance. You know, while we were still in production, the network stepped away from all of their comedy development. So I think that played a part into it as well. And I think there was, you know, a lot of business decisions that also affected that show.
We're going through a big change in this industry. You know, and it's good and it's bad. A lot of networks are owning their own shows, whereas in the past, a network would just rent a show or license a show from a studio. So we're in this transition period where they're realizing they could be both the studio and the network. And I think that's hurting. You know, our show, Sirens, was with Fox Studios. And it was at USA. USA picked up their other show that they were the studio on that had lower ratings than us. I think that was part of it as well. So who knows? 10 years from now, I'm not so sure there'll be a studio network model.
Well, of course, I think it's the president of FX a month or two ago had said that there are too many shows, too many networks creating too many shows, that there's just such a glut. And that's another issue, and I'm sure you don't want that to sort of end, because that's kind of been great for guys like you who can, you know, if you can, there's so many places you could take a series.
There are, but it's still, I find it just as hard to place a show somewhere. Right. And I think because there are so many places and because the ratings are so low, the budgets are crushed. I mean, their budgets are so small, it's unbelievable. So it's pretty hard to make shows for the money that these shows are trying to do.
Yeah, and I think when you develop a show as well, especially in comedy, you know, an FX comedy is not, you know, really going to be the same as a TBS comedy, you know. And so when you are developing something, it's very hard to appeal to the wide gamut of places.
You know, we start with what can we write that we could be passionate about to get up in the morning and actually write it and ultimately watch it, and then we find a place later. You know, we don't set out to come up with a concept that we could take to 9 different markets.
Did the success of Marin open the door for you guys to do Benders at IFC? Was there a connection?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. We had a very, very good working experience with the executives on Marin, and that was pretty big. And I also think that Rescue Me was part of it, because the executive that actually approached us was new to the network and knew our tone from Rescue Me. And I think they wanted some shows to appeal to a different audience than the shows that came before Benders. So I think the combination of those two things were kind of the perfect storm.
Hmm. Well, why do you guys think that Marin, which you both co-executive produce on, I think if I'm crediting you correctly, why do you think that works on TV? How has Mark Maron been able to take his brand, this podcast brand and this comedy brand, and bring it to TV pretty seamlessly, really?
I think it's true to who Mark is as a person. You know, he hasn't sold out. He's not afraid of showing who he really is. And those stories are drawn from real life. So he's got a pretty good, strong fan base. And the people that like him in general are the people that come and find the show. It's a niche show. It's not going to appeal to everybody. But it is on brand with who Mark Maron is. So if you like Mark, you're probably going to like his series.
I remember when I saw the first episode and saw Dennis's name on it, I went, whoa, okay, this is interesting. Right. So what do you guys the two of you and Dennis, what do you bring to a show like Marin? I mean, as executive producers, is it tonal? Is it production? Is it budgeting? I mean, where
I think it's
fit in?
I think it's all of that. I mean, we approached Mark about the idea of doing the series, and also came up with an unorthodox approach. We didn't pitch it to networks. We said, Mark, you know, we see what's going on with the podcast. We're fans of the podcast. We want to kind of try to figure out a way to build the show using that in a way that Larry Sanders did, you know. Exactly what that is, we're not sure, but if we could all figure it out together, we'd like to go out and shoot it on spec. So we did. We put it together. We brought our friends from New York out to Los Angeles. We actually shot it at his home.
That sounds like something somebody in the Five Families would have said. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we brought our friends out from New York out to Los Angeles, you know.
Yeah, well, that's how we operate. I think that if we went and pitched it traditionally, it would have never made it to series.
Yeah, and we had set out, even when we shot that, we set out to shoot like an 8-minute presentation, you know, and in 2 days we actually had a full pilot. Because I think, like Jim said, the stories come from himself, and we originally had just, you know, a storyline that we were going to follow, something that truly happened to him, and other elements just were added in and built it out really nicely, and you could get a sense of who he was.
I think Mark said on the show. Sorry, I'm getting a little feedback on myself. He said on the show that when the show started, a lot of it was really drawn from his life and things that happened. And as someone who's been listening to him forever, he's been on this show way back in 2010, I think, when it was just – I was just doing podcasts, no video. And things that in that first season, maybe even to the second season, came right from his life and things that he had talked about in the podcast. But in the third season, it seems like it's kind of grown a bit beyond that.
Yeah.
It's taken on kind of a life of its own.
It is. It has taken on, and it's going to continue to do so. And I think Mark is – I think he was a little trepidatious and not really comfortable doing that at the beginning, to be honest. And I think now that he's gotten used to this. He's a little more comfortable showing an exaggerated version and making up stories.
He's also, I got to give him credit, he's gotten better as an actor. I mean, he's...
Absolutely.
He's not just a guy, he's not just a comedian. I mean, he's been a comedian forever. That goes back before the podcast days.
So yeah.
I don't want to say he's not just a guy with a podcast who found himself on TV, but you get the sense that he has... And he's so neurotic, but
yeah.
You get the sense that he's actually looked at what he's done in the first season or two and kind of studied it and given it a lot of thought and has really improved upon what he's presenting as a character and a persona on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. He works so hard and he puts his life into this stuff. And you get better by doing things. So he now has a lot of episodes and a lot of hours in front of cameras. So it naturally happens, but... He is one of the hardest working guys I know, so he definitely put a lot of time and thought into it and studied his craft.
Is there a fourth season pickup in place for that show?
We think so. I don't know that it's 100%, but we're working towards that.
Good, good. Look forward to more of those. One more question about this, and then just a couple last things I want to talk to you about, Dennis, of course. But... on the model on these shows. Now, it used to be, you know, if you did a network sitcom or even an off-network kind of sitcom, maybe like a TBS kind of thing, if you did a network sitcom, you'd look at, you know, you'd want to get 5 seasons of 22 episodes each or something close to that, get up to 100 episodes, and then you know the show would live on in syndication. A show like Marin, which may do 10 to 13 episodes a season, which Rescue Me was pretty much the same thing. Where do you make the money on these shows? Is it just the production fees up front? Is there a back end to be had?
You're talking about where do we personally make the money?
Anyone. I mean, it seems like you're doing 8 episodes of Benders, for example.
Yeah, I mean, you make the money up front. You know, Marin, will that comedies don't translate overseas in general in half hour. Some do. There are exceptions to that rule. But that's another reason these budgets are low and you're scrambling to figure out the puzzle of how to shoot a show in 3 days and make it look relatively high quality in that amount of time. So you have to go into it thinking it may not ever syndicate. You're not going to make money that way. Right. So you have to be willing to, you know, work for those fees. And those fees aren't very high. But again, we love what we do. We like the shows we're working on and writing on. So that's what's most important, and yeah, we're making a living doing it.
Well, there have been two models that have come out in the last 5 or 6 years, I guess. There's this model, maybe longer, I guess, what you guys are doing currently with Benders and Sirens, where it's a short season. And then you have the opposite of that, like the anger management model, which was they did 10 episodes, and if it got a certain rating, then they'd do 90 more, and they'd do it all in like 2 years, which seemed insane, and it didn't really seem to work out.
Giant failed experiment.
Yeah, I mean,
it just that one got lucky because the first one happened to work, so everyone thought, "Holy shit, we have a new model." That model's ridiculous,
right?
And I think partly for us too is, you know, we ended up with 8 because we didn't do a pilot in the traditional sense. They ordered us direct to series off of our script, so you know, a smaller order was there rather than going deep into a 13 episode season.
Okay, I was just curious. I mean, a show like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is, I guess, on its, I don't know, 80th season now.
Yeah.
It's had a life and probably is making money in syndication.
Oh, because, big money.
Right, they run it to death. But we haven't really seen another one of those appear yet.
I think Louis did. I think Louis...
Louis's probably not making the same kind of money. And it can't repeat... I don't think you can repeat it at the same times a day that you can repeat Sunny.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they made a big sale.
Okay. Well, good.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder. It's hard. But, you know, a guy like Louis, he's not going into this to become rich. I mean, it would be great. He's happy to have the money, but he's an artist, and he's doing his art. He's doing an extended version of the same types of shows and films he was doing his whole life. And, I mean, we're trying to do that same thing. You know, we're trying to stay true to our brand. And we're always doing that test. Is this something that we could find ourselves watching? Do we really love it enough to jump in and work on it?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's wrap up with just a couple questions about the Rescue Me and Dennis and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. you guys get out of here. This is going to seem like such a redundant question, but I have to ask. Why do you think Rescue Me was such a big success? I guess it starts with Dennis. I mean, he was at the center of the whole thing. But
yeah.
Why did it work for so long, and why did it really capture people's imagination?
Listen, it was a post 9/11 story that was grounded. And I think at the end of the day, Dennis created a character that people, it was a likable asshole, you know, another guy that people really rooted for and related to the problems he was going through. And I think the combination of writing between Dennis and Peter Tolan, who's one of the best writers in television and film, you know, was helpful.
Yeah. And I think the way that the tone of the show, moved along, I think it was something that people can relate to, similar to real life, where, you know, sometimes you're at a dramatic situation and something funny happens, and sometimes you could be laughing and you get a call and, you know, everything changes in the room. And there was a lot of that in that show. So, you know, I think people can relate to that in the sense of their own lives, where it's not always just one thing or the other.
I think one of the things that made that show, if I could just say, is we start with Dennis, and Dennis is at the core. Tommy, the character, is at the core of every episode. But the series did such a great job of building the surrounding characters, the supporting characters. I mean, you could go from the daughters who grew up literally before our eyes and went from being small children to having crazy things happening in their lives by the end of the series, and Tommy's ex-wife Janet and his priest brother, and I mean, dad. It was just insane. There was no badly drawn character on that show, and of course the fire and post 9/11. But of course, by the time the series ended, even though it tied in with the 9/11 roots that it started with, you almost forgot that it was a 9/11 type of. It was a response to 9/11 in many ways. It had just become its own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Absolutely. But a lot of it was drawn from real-life research. You know, yeah. So I think as crazy and off the wall as it might have gotten, most of it was plausible.
Hmm. And can each of you tell me something about Dennis that we might not otherwise know, maybe an anecdote or something?
I can tell you one thing that most people don't realize, that Dennis, most people see his persona as, you know, gruff, you know, rough, tough, whatever. But Dennis has a lot of soft spots that you wouldn't be surprised about. And it's probably not what Jimmy was expecting me to bring out as Dennis's secrets. But, you know, kids, he's like super lovable too. But the other thing, if you go to Dennis's house, you know, he could torture me at work all day. But if I go to his house for something, he's like the most gracious guest in the world, like serving you sandwiches and things. And it's almost like, I wonder what happened to the real Dennis when I go, you know, visit him. So there is a soft side to Dennis, would be the thing that I would say. It's a small.
I completely disagree. I think Dennis is exactly what he appears to be. I think he's putting on a show for you, Tom. I've never seen that side of him.
Jim, how did you meet him?
I was booking his live appearances, and I was at a management company booking college gigs and club gigs for a lot of comics in New York in the early 90s. I met Dennis that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
And last question, I think. Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, which you guys are you writing on that or strictly executive producing on that?
We're executive producers. We help develop the stories. We may do some directing this season.
Okay. And the thing about the show, in the first episode where Dennis mistakes a woman at the bar for someone hitting on him, it turns out to be his daughter, kind of sets the tone for that show. It's kind of like, okay, it's a little Tommy, and yet it's not.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
it's a little Dennis, and it's not.
It was really smart, wasn't it, to draw a line that sort of connective tissue there between Rescue Me and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll at the beginning, and then it goes off in its own way. That's comforting for an audience, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, I don't know if it was completely planned that way. I think so much of this stuff is just drawn from Dennis, who he is as an artist. So there's going to be some consistencies. I get that the audience is comforted by that, but I don't think it was exactly calculated.
Yeah. I mean, I could have easily seen one of his daughters on Rescue Me kicking him in the nuts.
Oh, I agree. 100%. I agree with what you're saying. I just don't think that was our MO.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, folks, you can watch Jim Serpico and Tom Saletti's new sitcom, Benders, only on IFC on Thursdays at 10 p.m. starting today, October 1st. And while the first season of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll is on FX is over, you can catch the episodes you missed online. Guys, will there be a website for Benders or any social media that you want people to know about?
Yeah, on IFC.com there's a Benders page, and they've got all the videos, posts and photos, and that would be great.
And IFC is a Benders Facebook page as well. Right. All those things are posted, and people can go on and like it and see everything. So it's been a good response on there as well.
Great, and we'll have all those links on the MrMedia.com at the bottom of the page. People can click on those and follow those through. Jim Serpico, Tom Saletti, have enjoyed the shows you guys have been attached to for so long, going all the way back to The Job, which I remember very well. It was a great show. It ended too soon.
Yeah.
And thank you guys so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
All right, thanks for having
us. Enjoy the day. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of foul-mouthed reprobates whose bad habits, substance addictions, marital woes, and social indiscretions appear endless in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.